Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'm in the big cat house these days. That's what I'm.
You touched the live lion?
He was asleep, but yeah, I got to.
What if you had awakened him and he had clawed your neck off?
Well, he didn't. He was under anesthesia.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That's the best way to pet a lion.
I got to do it. Exactly.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then. Still from an undisclosed third floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air. Chris Saliza and Gary Braun, Michael Kornheiser. Nigel will run the board and do news. Barry Zwerluga will join us later. I'm in a bad mood because I got an email from
pitchers and catch pitchers no. and fetchers reporting.
I got an email from somebody who apparently knows me.
Eat it.
It took liberties with what I actually said and what I actually did, and it turned them around into something that I did not actually say and did not actually do. And so I sent back.
So you mean someone sent you an email like putting your nose in the poo? Saying,
yes.
Like you said this.
Remember
yes.
that time
this.
That you said something?
Yes.
Okay, but it wasn't
didn't
an accurate.
Actually, it was okay. not accurately portrayed.
Okay.
This person was able to sort of walk on high and able to say, you see, this is what you did, and as a result, all of these things
eat
happened.
Eat it, Kornheiser,
right.
basically.
You know what you should reply
so
to that?
I'm angry.
I know you didn't reply this
I
way.
I did
but,
reply.
You should have just replied, congratulations, exclamation mark.
Yeah, I should
like,
have
you know what I mean?
Good
for you.
And what was
good
the nature of the reply? Was it a corrective reply?
I'm not going there.
Okay.
I'm not going there
He
now.
Can put that on his epitaph.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyway,
jerk.
So this week, I think I've mentioned this every single day this week so far. This is the slowest week in sports in the entire calendar because in terms of things that you can actually talk about and build an audience. There is no NBA. The allegedly living, breathing commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, has allowed everyone in the NBA to take a full week off, thereby just destroying any momentum that the league might have had. Though the league had no momentum this year at all because everybody's just waiting for the inevitable. And actually very, very attractive matchup of the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors in the finals. Well, they're going to get a fantastic rating when it happens, but there's nothing to talk about, or there didn't appear to be anything to talk about in terms of pro basketball. You cannot talk about hockey for any length of time on radio or television unless you are on the hockey channel because – when you start talking about it and you're not on the hockey channel, the next sound you hear is 10 million clickers in America moving to the Hallmark channel.
I would literally rather watch a blank television screen.
There,
it's disastrous talking about hockey. College basketball is in that period of time where you're going, okay, I get it.
Starting to
now
matter.
Now let's move into the conference championships, which are fun to watch, and then the NCAAs, which mean everything. So it's sort of a lull at this point.
So welcome to Franchise Tag Radio,
right,
boys
so
and girls.
And the NFL is non-existent at the moment, and you can't really wrap your arms around baseball yet. You haven't done anything.
Nope.
So
I thought we were going to do the big preview of the combine today.
Well, no, we're not going to do that.
We did talk
about
that.
By the way,
that.
We will have Adam Schefter on tomorrow. Although I don't know that I'm going to talk to him about the combine. I don't know what I'm going to talk to him about.
What's the opposite of a pop-up show? Like a go-away show? Maybe this could just be one of those.
Well,
just wrap
in that vein, there were a couple big fixtures in the Champions League yesterday. Atletico Madrid bested Bayer Leverkusen. And Manchester
City
took out Monaco 5-3.
Do you have any particular... As long as we're going to do this.
3-0 in that game. Yeah. With like
do you have any particular comment on Sutton East... or whatever it is.
Sutton United.
Yeah, against Arsenal, where the roly-poly goalie, this 46-year-old
the meat pie.
Fat guy, ate the meat and potato pie.
Did you see after the game, which Arsenal won one? First of all, Sutton United is a fifth division. There are 102 teams in between Arsenal and Sutton United.
Right.
But they do the thing where they play every team of every level, I think is awesome.
It's fine.
After the game, in which you could be outside the stadium and be 50 feet away from the field. But I mean, it's a tiny field. All the Sutton United fans ran on the field, and all the Arsenal guys, many of whom make $300,000-$400,000 a week, immediately sprinted off the field for fear of being injured. But they're playing Lincoln City next, which is another really low-end team.
Even can we mute Saliza?
It's just this has to end.
I have any number of other thoughts.
Well, no, isn't the story about the roly-poly goalie that he had to resign?
Well, the reason, because
it was
one of the prop bets. One of the prop bets on this game was that this fatso would eat a meat and potato pie while sitting on the bench which he did. Clearly, he was aware of the bet.
Right, he bet
and clearly, it was a scandal, you know, and you don't have to pay off.
The coach is unpaid in vapes on the sidelines and was told not to do that, and he said, I'll do whatever I want. Yeah. I mean,
but how is that dude at 46 years old, 6'2", 320, or whatever he's listed?
No, it's ridiculous.
Those are my dimensions.
How does he make any saves?
I don't know.
Well, he's
how
the,
is he even
he
in
couldn't,
the league?
He couldn't even save in a hockey goal. He couldn't save.
A lot of these guys are not. I mean, this is not. Some, a lot of these guys are playing for almost no money.
So
I mean, when
like
you get down to that level, it's like a recreational
league. It's a softball beer league. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, I just, at the risk of antagonizing the few people we have left for this show.
By the way, that 3 minutes was my greatest 3 minutes ever on the show.
Fantastic. So let's get to the new, the big news story yesterday as the news fairy, thankfully, sprinkled dust on all of us. And what the news fairy did was reveal that Jeannie Buss took out the long knives. She had Magic Johnson at her side, and they fired her brother, Jimmy Buss, and they fired Mitch Kupchak, the general manager. They went so far in this palace coup to fire the PR guy, John Black. The PR guy. Come on. Stop.
Come on, man.
The PR guy. They fired John Black. Okay. Now, there's some question of legality whether or not Jeannie Buss has the authority to do this. If you examine the way the Lakers are structured, that each of the children of Jerry Buss has exactly the same amount of shares in this, you might be able to say, wait, how does Jeannie Buss have the authority to do this? Now, that's for somebody else to decide if it ever goes to court. I don't care about that.
How many kids are there?
Six.
Okay. So they each have about 20%.
Six?
They each have 11.
I've only ever heard of two of them.
They each have 11%.
That doesn't seem
okay. Right. So anyway, but that doesn't even matter. Magic Johnson is now running the Los Angeles Lakers. And so you think to yourself, you know, okay, great. What's Magic Johnson going to do? Well, apparently he's not going to do anything. Because the first thing he did was make a deal with Rob Pelinka to be the general manager of the Lakers, which one would think is the thing that Magic Johnson would want to do, to assemble a team himself and be the GM, but he opted for Rob Pelinka. What is interesting about Rob Pelinka, from a historical standpoint, he was a player on the University of Michigan who was there when the Fab Five arrived.
I knew that name. That. He was like the seventh man
pretty good
after
player.
Ray Jackson and Jimmy King.
He was a pretty good player on a very good team.
Yeah.
So he has basketball skills. There's no question about that. More importantly, for the subject of discussion here, he's an agent. He's an agent. He's Kobe Bryant's agent. Hmm. And now he's the general manager. So if you ask yourself, gee, do you think Kobe will come back? This is not a hard question at this moment. Hmm. Kobe Bryant will be back. The questions I have is, will Pat Riley be back? Will Jerry West be back? Will Phil Jackson be back? How many people will be back? And so Wilbon says to me yesterday on the air, you know, I don't understand this. It's just so typical of you that all you care about is stars. And I said, these are the Los Angeles Lakers. This is La La Land. You have to have stars there. They don't have any stars. Here's what happened, I think. Jeannie Buss woke up the day after the All-Star game and saw that Boogie Cousins had been traded, not to her, but had been traded to New Orleans, had been traded out of the state, and the Lakers didn't get him. And she probably woke up and said, that's it, I'm boiling
eggs. For not much,
I'm done.
By the way.
I love
for
that she...
Nothing.
Yeah.
For nothing. For Spalding's. For nothing.
I love that she shivved her brother. I mean, just straight up.
Yeah. Mitch Kupchak had continuous service with the Los Angeles Lakers since 1981.
Wow.
And by the way, nobody in the league would tell you he was anything other than a very good general manager. He brought Pau Gasol in when Shaq was gone. He brought Gasol in. They won two more championships. He was there assisting Jerry West when they put Shaq and Kobe together. He's very, very good. And he was a player on some of their championship teams. And now he's gone. So I'm curious. What are you guys thinking? What is Magic Johnson? Is this a smart thing? What?
I think if you need to restore the sort of... Well, to your point, the Lakers, Showtime, all that stuff. I think he brings a massive amount of star power.
Because no players have it.
To it. I don't know how much that matters anymore. I feel like players now are so much more savvy about the team situation, the tax. I mean, when I was a kid, there was no like, oh, we got to go play in Florida because there's no state income tax. You know, I feel like they're so much more savvy about their situations now. I don't know that just having Magic Johnson there matters.
Well, that's the thought does. Is Magic Johnson will open up the door to the Lakers, and before he gets in, he'll find 15 great players who want to play there. At the moment, they're trying to lose every game left in their schedule.
They just
traded their best player for nothing.
They dumped Lou Williams. I was
for
hoping
nothing.
they would dump him to the Wizards, yeah. But they dumped him to the Rockets. It seems to me a symbolic move to say, remember the golden days when you all have seen on TV? They don't even watch
yeah,
it now,
I don't. You know? I mean, that's the question, is like, to what extent does that resonate with a... you know, Otto Porter, just to pick a name.
A 20-year-old, 1 year out of Duke.
It was the 80s.
No.
It was the 80s when they were great.
Magic was awesome. He's a Hall of Famer.
They
weren't alive. Showtime, he doesn't care.
Right.
No, I mean, that was when I was a kid. I'm 41. I mean, that's when I was a kid. Those guys are not even... They're like Shaq and Kobe.
I mean, Magic in charge of all basketball operations. I mean, Magic knows basketball. Sure. He's a very accomplished businessman.
Yes, he is.
I get it. He certainly...
He makes you feel good.
Certainly adds some cachet.
He makes you feel good. He can get a meeting with anybody. He can do all of those things. He has enormous stature, and he's a person who every time you're around him, you feel better about yourself than you did an hour before that. I'm just sort of surprised that his first act is to say, okay, you, Rob Pelinka, you be the GM.
Well, Jeannie Buss's statement was effective immediately. Irvin Johnson will be in charge of all basketball operations and will report directly to me. Our search for a new general manager to work with Irvin and Coach Walton is well underway, and we hope to announce one in short order. It's like it doesn't seem like it was ever the
plan. By the way, if you're Luke Walton, how do you feel right now? You weren't told about this. You were hired by Kupchak and Jimmy Buss, and by the way, I think you've lost 20 of your last 25.
And they just fired your PR guy.
And you're going to lose every game for the rest of the season by design.
I think you want. Yeah, I mean, you
by
want
design because you want to protect
and
that lottery.
And this is going to be a really good draft.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, let's say that every year.
Well, Markelle Fultz and Dennis Smith Jr. And I mean, there's real.
Maybe.
But you're right. You're right. Maybe. You never know. You High know. Ceiling. Yeah. Can I make the counter argument on the Magic thing? I actually think you could make the argument that this is an evidence that he's doing it right, in that almost every case when you see the director of basketball operations or, you know, the GM try to also be the coach or, you know, these dual jobs, it doesn't work. Belichick is the one example. So maybe he's saying, look, I'm not – this is not what I'm great at. This is not what I'm great at. I will have a say, and I will be the public face to both the basketball world – right.
Right.
I mean, rather than saying I'm going to do everything.
I think what Magic Johnson does best, and this is no small task to me, is he is welcoming to everybody out there. So agents who want to place a player or players who are thinking about moving, Magic Johnson will talk to you and you will have a positive inclination about the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yes, he can sell. I mean, he can say to an agent, I'm going to build this thing back up to what it
he
was when
I was here.
He has complete
credibility.
Yeah.
And
he's
a
five-time champion and a Hall of Famer.
And I think, remember, we were talking about this summer how the Wizards couldn't even get a meeting with Durant.
Magic can get a meeting.
Will get you a meeting with anyone.
Anybody.
That
anybody.
Helps. He
the
gets
Lakers,
you in the
I
room.
Believe, also did not get a
right.
meeting
he'll
with
get
Durant.
You. He'll get you in the room.
Yes, and I think that's very important.
That's not insignificant.
I think that's very important. Also in the news, and when we come back, we will talk to Barry Zwalugha about this. Matt Wieters, who was a four-time All-Star right, with the Baltimore Orioles, a catcher, has signed with the Washington Nationals. So when we return, we will talk to Barry Zwalugha, who is in West Palm Beach with the Nats. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies, Reed. They want you to elevate your underwear game to the next level with MeUndies. Now, I'm not a next level guy. I hear that all the time. I belong to an organization or two that when they have an opening, they talk about, let's take this to the next level. And I always look and I go, what are you talking about?
It's a good level.
What does this really mean? The level you're on is a good level. Everybody needs underpants. You know, why don't you just say, we've got really good underpants. And they
underpants.
Do in the next
Can
line.
We ISO that sound, please?
You perfected your wardrobe, but what about the stuff not everybody gets to see? If you've been settling for store-bought underwear five packs, I haven't seen five packs, I've seen threes.
Underpants.
I have something that will change your life for the better. It's MeUndies. What's the first thing you put on, the last thing you take off? It's your underwear. Make your most important piece of clothing the best it can be with MeUndies. It's seriously soft, feel-good undies delivered right to your door. They're designed in L.A., so we've just been talking about L.A. They're made from sustainably sourced micro-modal, a fabric three times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft, luxe, L-U-X-E. Is there such a word, luxe? There's deluxe. Like a deluxe apartment.
If you take the luxe out of it.
Softer than soft luxe undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. Michael, you have some of those things.
I'm still recovering from the Valentine's Day MeUndies.
Tony, luxe is an adjective, meaning expensive or of high quality.
Luxe E.
And guess what? Yeah, like Sheila E.
Yeah, exactly.
And guess what? You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. If you're not ready for a subscription, it's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK. Get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead, revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/TonyK. MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Tom Goddard from Tucson, Arizona. He writes love songs. And this one he wrote to the woman who was not then when he wrote it, but is now related to him by marriage. He plays in Barry's Verluga, and Barry is in West Palm Beach with the Washington Nationals, which is advantageous for us because the Washington Nationals are in the news today because yesterday they signed Matt Wieters to a fabulous deal if you're Matt Wieters, I think. It may not be the most money in the world, but it's a one-year deal because he has the option at the end of the first year to just leave and declare himself a free agent. And if he has a good year, why wouldn't you do that? This is a pretty good deal. A bunch of things suggest themselves, which is, why did it take so long to get him? Why didn't somebody else want him? And how did he get a deal that seems, at least theoretically, Barry, so good for himself?
Well, I would say, let me take the second part first. I think it's actually good for the club as well. I mean, general managers will tell you that there are no bad one-year deals because what you want if you're the Nationals out of this deal is you want him to opt out because that means he's had an excellent 2017. He has contributed to a club that you expect to win. If he plays well and outperforms, what would turn into after this year a one-year $11 million deal because that's his option to take for 2018 if he doesn't perform well this year. You know, if he plays well, he's gonna become a free agent, and you're gonna have a really good contribution at a fair price of $10 million this season. It took a long time, I think, for a couple of reasons. One, his agent Scott Boras is not afraid of the slow play at all. In fact, he excels at it, and he will wait for the market to seemingly pass him by, and then move in late. He's done it with Max Scherzer in the past, who signed late in January with the Nationals in the year that he was a free agent. It's kind of the way he works. The other thing with Wieters, frankly, is a health issue. There are two things here. He had some sort of mishap in early in the offseason that put him in a cast for a while, and I think that teams were wondering whether his wrist was okay. And in fact, the Nationals physical with Wieters is scheduled for today. And secondly, he's a guy who had Tommy John surgery in 2014. In a way, he's a better American League player because then you not only have catcher to play him at, but you could get him at bats at DH. Last year, he caught 111 games for the Orioles. That's plenty of games. But it's also 51 games that he didn't start behind the plate. So he's not a guy that you're going to put back there 140 times and just not worry about. You kind of have to have a capable backup in place. So he definitely lengthens and deepens the lineup. He has some pop. He has some stuff to prove. He would like to turn a one-year, $10 million deal into a 4 or 5 year and pick a number, $60, $70 million deal. And if he does that, then the Nationals will have benefited from it.
The Nats were, of all their positions, where they were hurt the most was catcher. When Wilson Ramos, at the worst possible time, right before he was to become a free agent, went and injured himself and was useless for the Nats. And the Buffalo was the slowest runner in the history of mankind, but he also had a lot of RBI, and he was a solid, solid player. You bring up the fact that Wieters will probably catch 110 to 120 games, I'm assuming. I'm going to do the math myself. Who is their backup?
Well, and that's now a storyline that will have to be determined in spring training. I mean, a lot of things can happen now because suddenly there's a glut at the position. And it's hard to, you know, imagine that suddenly becomes a glut when there's only one player added. But if you think about it, there are now three major league catchers, essentially, with Jose Lobaton, who's been Ramos's backup here for the last few years. They got Derek Norris, traded for Derek Norris, who's coming off, former All-Star, who's coming off a terrible offensive season with San Diego, a former Nats prospect, a guy who they drafted and developed originally and traded away in the Gio Gonzalez trade. And then Pedro Severino, who is their catcher of the future. So here's the thing. Everybody is kind of saying the Nationals need a closer. They now have a glut at catcher. They should turn to the White Sox and try to turn their glut at catching into David Robertson, the White Sox closer. But if you're the White Sox, you really want Severino in that deal because you're in a full-on rebuild. You want the young guy, the controllable guy contract-wise, the guy with the high upside. You don't want, you know, Jose Lobaton, an established major league backup player. And you may not want Norris, who's coming off such a bad year. So a trade that involves Severino doesn't solve their kind of overabundance of catcher in at the major league level. So right. It'll be difficult to figure it out without a trade, but it also is hard to make a trade happen when everybody's going to want Severino instead of the other guys.
Let me get to something that I found amusing and interesting and the heart of your piece today in the paper, and that is the fact that they made this deal and they picked up somebody from the Orioles, and I think you said they had made trades with, I don't know, 28 other teams or something like that, and never with the Orioles. And you see something interesting, if not even malevolent, in this whole thing. Can you explain that to people?
Well, I think there is malevolence because these two ownership groups can't stand each other. I mean, they are tied up in a court case that the Nationals believe fundamentally alters their ability to construct a roster. Now, you can believe that or not. I mean, the Lerners are gazillionaires, and they could, you know, put any amount of their business revenue toward payroll that they wanted. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, like you said, I went back and looked. Since baseball came back to Washington in 2005 and the Expos became the Nationals, the two general managers here, Jim Bowden and Mike Rizzo, have successfully completed trades with 29 of the 30 teams in Major League Baseball.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And the one outside is the Orioles. And anybody who thinks that is a coincidence is crazy. It's why when, you know, there's some talk about, well, you know, the Nationals could solve their closer issue at the trade deadline if they feel like they need to do that. The closer who is most likely to be most attractive and could be on the market around that time would be Zach Britton of the Orioles.
Well, he's not used. The manager there doesn't put him in the game, so he'd be fresh.
Correct. He would be quite fresh. Britton coming off an awesome season last year, All-Star, could have been, you know, was fourth in the Cy Young voting. And if the Orioles are not in contention, it would make sense that he would be traded. He will not be traded to Washington. I'm convinced of that. I don't think that these two ownership groups, even if the baseball people could figure out a good baseball deal, will allow each other to be dealt with. And so I don't, you know, we I think when baseball came back, we kind of assumed that there would be this natural on-field rivalry between the Orioles and the Nats. And there are elements of, you know, tons of O's fans coming to Nats Park and some Nats fans going to Camden Yards and you know, hearing cheers when the away team does something good. That's happened some, but not to the degree maybe that we expected 10 or 12 years ago. What has happened is real animosity and real rancor between
good.
The ownership groups. So
good. See in court, counselor. That's good. That makes me happy. So they are now, you know, to the untrained eye like mine, the Nats are as good, if not better, position by position than they were at the end of last year. As good, if not better, with one exception, the invented position, thanks to Tony La Russa, of closer. And that has hurt them. They're three times in the playoffs. That is why they didn't advance in the playoffs. And they did nothing. Nothing. What does closer look like?
Well, right now, closer looks like either Sean Kelly, you know, who has two Tommy John surgeries in his past, or Blake Treinen, who's never pitched in that role. And
right.
Kelly hasn't pitched in that role either. So
Blake Treinen should be deported.
What about Coda Glover?
What about Hoda Kotb?
Yeah.
Coda Glover has, if we're going to get all scout speaky, the highest ceiling of the three, probably. But you got to remember, he's an eighth round draft pick 2 years ago. He wasn't a high-end prospect. He has enormous potential and throws really hard. And if you watch, he does have the kind of, if you believe that you need a certain bravado to pitch that inning, he seems to kind of have that. But internally, they admit that, look, we can't throw him into that situation. Now you're more likely to break a young guy, I think he's 23, than you are to build up success. So If he comes out, if he starts the season and he's blowing people's doors off in the sixth and seventh, you can see him moving up the ladder. But they're not going to make him the closer for April 3rd.
Do you agree with me that if you go position by position, they're better than they were at the end of last year now?
Yeah, I think that's right, Tony. I mean, you know, now what we don't discuss when we say that is what's been lost in terms of the prospect train.
Right.
You know, they dealt a bunch to the White Sox
to get the center
Adam
fielder.
Eaton.
Yeah.
Right. But they will. What
sneaky
I think,
tall Adam Eaton.
What I think you will like about this lineup is you're getting a full season of Trey Turner.
Yeah.
And you get Adam Eaton, who is a, who puts the bat on the ball, moves the ball around. Those two at the top of the order are going to cause a lot of disruption. They managed to, with the Weeder signing, kind of minimize the impact of Ramos's loss. Ramos is coming off an all-star season. But, you know, from year to year, you don't know whether you're getting Ramos for 130 games or for 80 games because he's had injuries. One thing I would say in which they're not better, I think, is defensively. Because Danny Espinosa, for all the frustration and
very good defensive player,
just
great arm,
superb defensive shortstop with perhaps the best arm in the league, and in a way, he helped mask a little bit of Daniel Murphy's defensive deficiencies at second base, because if there was a slow turn on a double play, Espinosa could make up for it with his arm. Little subtle things that Trey Turner, Mike Rizzo has said, rookie shortstops make 25 or 30 errors. You can kind of bank on that as it's his natural position, but that doesn't mean he's going to make every single play. And then Eaton in center, I mean, you had Trey Turner out there the second half of last year kind of learning the position on the fly, so it wasn't flawless. But people say, who have watched Eaton for years, say that he's a better right fielder than center fielder, and they've got Harper over there. So I do think position by position they're better other than closer, but I would watch the defense, particularly early in the year.
All right, I'll get you out of here on this. Dr. Thomas Boswell writes that there's no reason for concern with Max Scherzer. He is asked, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned should we be about Max Scherzer's knuckle? And Dr. Boswell writes, it's a 2, meaning next to nothing, but not quite nothing. I'd make it a 1, but he could always hurry back too quickly and either re-injure the knuckle or compensate for it in his delivery and hurt his elbow or his shoulder. I don't want to get too geeky here, but here's the like a $4 billion pitcher, the current Cy Young pitcher, who announced about 2 weeks ago can't go till opening day, not sure I can go then, I've got a broken knuckle. And they just brought in the boys from Dover, you know, the Harvard Medical School team, pronounces this no problem at all. Is this no problem at all?
Well, I mean, I'm just walking into the place, so I'm not going to, you know, I haven't asked around. But I would say that, I would say two things. One, I get Boz's point because it is a knuckle and not, when you start talking shoulder or elbow, that's sure. when any sort of prognostications of optimism are, should be met with a lot of skepticism. However, when a pitcher in spring training can't throw yet and can't pitch
right.
off a mound.
Till opening day.
No. He can pitch. He's going to be able to throw off a mound before opening day.
No.
But every day that you lose is a day that you're not building up your arm strength. You're not on your program. You're not working toward the season. That costs you a day of the season. So, really, we should be paying attention to, okay, when does he start throwing? How many weeks is that from the season? When he does start throwing, you should probably count 6.5 weeks to when he should be, you know, when he could pitch in a game for 6 or 7 innings. If it's next week at this time and he hasn't thrown off a mound, now we're talking about he's missing starts in the season. So I would just monitor it that way. I think there's a way to look at it and be not very concerned. If it's a week and we're having the same conversation, then I think the concern is heightened.
Enjoy yourself, and we'll see you when you get back. Thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Tony.
Barry's Verluga, boys and girls in West Palm Beach. It's not a bad place to be, although to be fair, it's going to be 70 degrees in Washington tomorrow.
Pretty balmy here.
This is a pretty nice place to be as well. We will take a break. When we come back, Nigel will lead us into news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Scott Cranfield in Rochester, New York. His band is Violet Mary.
Rochester.
Rochester, New York, absolutely. Upstate.
Home of the
Rochester. I thought I'd attach one more of our songs. This one a bit timely. It's called I Love Myself. We wrote it during the campaign. That's very funny. So he went to Chad's. He took the red line to Chad's on a recent visit. Said, if I could offer one piece of constructive criticism, it'd be nice if the bar had more craft beers on tap. You
Boom.
Know, your wishes are command, right, Michael?
Done. It's happening in the near future.
This is what's going to happen. If people want to send us music, Michael, how do they do it?
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
All right, so I know this is news, but now I'm angry. Gary told a story during the break, which we're not going to have anybody talk about now. But it was about fishing, okay? And then Michael said to me, you went fishing once. When did I go fishing? When you went with me?
Roughly 1993.
I'm guessing 93, 94.
And I don't like fishing. I don't like...
You caught a rainbow trout about 3 inches in diameter.
And what did I do with it?
Delicious.
I think you just left it on the line.
Ate it live.
I've never heard fish being measured by diameter.
I don't...
That's interesting. Circumference.
I went through this yesterday. I don't like quiet. A lot of people fishing, they like, Gary is a fisherman, though not, you're not a lake fisherman. You go out
I'll do fresh water fishing.
You're
but
the
yeah,
ocean.
I prefer deep sea.
So you can talk in that.
Yeah, but, drink beer. That's the whole point.
What I was told when you started to go fishing was that don't talk. Be quiet or you'll scare the fish. Well, I don't like quiet. It's just not what I do. I don't mind getting up at 4 a.m. I don't mind going out into a rowboat on a lake with a couple of people.
As long as you can see land, you're fine.
Yeah,
right?
I don't mind dropping a line. I have to see land. I don't mind dropping the line down. I mind not talking. I don't understand. I mean, it's not like I want to bring a boombox out there, but I mind not talking. It's just stupid to me to go do something that requires a complete silence, unless you're going to meditate. I respect that. I respect people who like quiet. We got into this yesterday with the difference between Mar-a-Lago and Camp David. And the attraction of Camp David is it's very rustic. You can be alone with your thoughts. You can hike. I don't want to hike. Hiking's stupid. If I'm going to walk, I want somebody carrying golf clubs next to me. I want to be on a golf course. I want to find the ball and hit the ball. And I want to talk to the people that I'm playing with. I'm just not your guy. Like when you want to sell quiet, I'm not your guy. Are you that guy? Maybe you like quiet.
What do you think?
I'm
terrible at being quiet.
I don't like quiet.
I used to, when I would run.
Most people who are quiet are about to be dead.
I would run, and the only way that I would motivate myself to run is I would end by going to Starbucks and getting a giant Java chip frappuccino at the end. That was like, that was my only, I mean, it's like walking. Like, well, I don't want to do it.
Let me ask you this, Tony.
I don't mind walking and talking. I mind quiet.
When your kids were, say, 15 and 12.
Yes.
Were they ever, was it about that age difference? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where mine were. Weren't there times where, like, you were in the house by yourself because the wife and kids were out?
Yeah.
And then it's quiet.
That's
and
okay.
That's
no, I don't.
Okay.
I'm
glorious.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, but I turn on the TV and I take a nap. Okay. But I like a little bit of noise. I'm okay with certain amounts of quiet.
But activities that require you be quiet.
Don't want that.
Okay, got it.
I don't want that. I don't want to be around other people and be told I can't talk.
So you don't,
I'm not a monk.
Libraries?
Okay? That's not how I want to live. I hate libraries.
Right.
I hate libraries. They're too quiet. I understand it. I appreciate it. I don't say that everyone should be allowed to talk. I won't go to a library. It's fine. And then they got this thing about you can't be quiet. You have to be quiet in a hospital. Why?
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. Everybody tells you in the hallways, be quiet.
It's my hatred of the quiet car.
That's just a rule for you.
I can't stand that.
I don't like the quiet car.
Because you get up, you rustle your newspaper. I was on the quiet car in an accident once.
I'm so tense.
Rustled my newspaper.
I'm so,
I swear to God,
tense in a quiet car. I am so fearful that I'm going to break the rules in some way. And I'm so anxious for somebody near me to break the rules so I can say, get this guy out of here and call the conductor over. I don't like quiet. Do you like quiet?
I like solitude. So I'm totally cool with being by myself and reading something or just thinking or whatever. But I don't gravitate.
I don't want to go on vacation to be quiet.
No, I'm with you. I don't gravitate towards events that are quiet. And if I'm
mass quiet, stupid.
And if I am doing something like hiking, which I'll do, I mean, you know, last summer we went to Grand Canyon, Sedona,
but
stuff.
You talk to
people. Of course, yeah, you're talking the whole time,
Michael.
So, you know,
do you feel in your childhood that something happened terrible in your childhood because I don't like quiet and I don't like fishing?
No, I appreciate that about you. I love that we grew up playing golf where there was always noise in the background. I think it makes it more fun.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is said about Columbia Country Club, because it is in a fairly urban circumstances, that you cannot play around. You can't go 18 without hearing sirens, either police sirens or ambulances or something like that. And it's always comforting to hear that. I just like noise.
I'm disappointed because I imagine when you and Michael play that when you go into your backswing, you hold up and you say, who just clicked that camera shutter?
No.
Who did that?
No.
Tiger style, call him out in the crowd.
If you're a sports writer,
who coughed?
You always worked in noise.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You
if you're any kind of
reporter,
in noise. That's what
I don't like quiet.
So
that's why I always admired, I didn't know anything about this, but I admired the notion that there are a lot of surgeons who like
music.
Rock and roll.
Heck
and
yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's good. I don't think that's a distraction. I think quiet is a distraction. And I'm always, I'm fearful of everything, obviously, but I'm always fearful that all the mass murders and all the murders are committed in quiet.
You wouldn't want your pilot, though, listening to Metallica while flying your plane,
bother you? No, I mean, I don't think that would necessarily bother me as long as he's a rock solid
I'm actually not good at working. My brother will frequently listen to music just about all the time. I mean, he'll listen to this show and then basically listen to music all day, and he's working, you know, typing, having phone conversations. I can't really do that.
Huh.
I find that a little distracting. I can't read if you're listening to music in the same room as me. Can you do that? I can't.
No, if I'm reading. If reading is important to me, I like to go into a quiet area. But I'm making a very specific distinction here. I don't like to be around people where it is important that everyone be quiet.
Where they're
I don't
enforcing
like that.
The quiet.
I don't like that.
Yes. Right.
And that's not to say, if I go to a movie, I don't want you talking in front of me.
Because
I'm there to hear the movie.
Right.
But I'm not there watching a silent movie. I'm not doing that. like that awful movie from 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, oh, with the dog.
That? Was the best silent
that
movie
was so
of the year.
Dumb. I watched like 10 minutes of that, the dog.
Yeah, what was that?
You don't like quiet, do you?
I mean, like Gary, I don't mind. I like solitude.
He loves
the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah, the Fortress of Solitude.
He doesn't. He's single. He doesn't even appreciate quiet.
No, he loves solitude, though. He's a weird cat.
But music.
Yes. I love music. So yeah, and music and TV. You know, there's always noise around me. But I'm confused because I thought you told me that when you fish, that you love to fish.
I hate fishing.
And before you would cast your line, you would say a Hail Mary to make sure. Or is that Fredo?
No, that's Fredo. Oh, that's not me.
In fact,
I was always afraid that I would.
The guy behind you would shoot you in
that
the head.
I would have a fishing rod with some poisonous lure on it, and that as I went to cast
poisonous
it, I would take
lure?
Out my own neck from behind, and I'd scratch myself, and then I would die.
Poison's a great way to catch fish.
I die alone like Kim Jong, whatever
exactly.
That guy's
somebody
name
runs
was
up and rubs toxins on your face
that's
in an
right
airport.
That's right. You allegedly think that was a specific hit, or do you think that's just sort of happened?
Just random.
That
happens,
just
happens
random
all the time. Yeah, dozens of people spontaneously.
How's that
combust
newscast going?
It's going great. I think this is my best one ever. We talked some NBA to open the show. Mm. The trade deadline is tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern. That would be 4 p.m. Atlantic time, just for those of you in Halifax who are listening.
Yeah. Oh.
One of the big trade rumors out there is possibly the Knicks sending Derrick Rose to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Ricky Rubio.
It's a good trade for both teams. Derrick Rose doesn't belong on the Knicks. He should go back to Tom Thibodeau, who's now coaching in Minnesota. He shouldn't be on the Knicks. Joakim Noah shouldn't be on the Knicks. Phil Jackson shouldn't be on the Knicks. Are a disaster. Derrick Rose wants to go into free agency. He actually has some pretty good numbers. He's averaging 17.7 and 4.5 assists in 32 minutes. And he would like to be a free agent. That just smells of failure in New York. Get out if you can get out. And by the, you know, everybody should get out. I mean, that's the Titanic. And by the way, Ricky Rubio is a much – if you have Carmelo Anthony and Porzingis and they're shooters, you need somebody to get him the ball, not Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose is way too ball dominant for
yeah
that team
yeah
as a point guard.
Yeah.
Ball dominant.
Stupid. It was a stupid
count it
signing.
Ball dominant.
Yeah.
NBA word.
After the Terrapins loss on Sunday to Wisconsin, 71-60.
They go by the Terps.
I'm sorry, the Terps. Yeah. That's right. I want to get the lingo right yeah from your country. It's always confusing
try
for
to
me
fit in.
Melo Trimble sat for about the last 4.5 minutes of that game.
As Wisconsin was pulling away.
Yes, and the initial explanation was that he short-armed some free throws and he was tired. And Coach
yes
Turton said, well, he was out of gas and I just, we need to rest him.
And we need him for like 4 games in 10 days or something.
Right. Later. But now...
Let me read this.
Okay.
This is a quote from Mark Turgeon. I was disappointed in all of our guys. I don't like to call them out in public, said Turgeon, who also sat starters Kevin Herter, is that how it's pronounced, Justin Jackson and Damonte Dodd over the final stretch of the game. We weren't rebounding. The guys that were sitting on the end of the bench the last 4 minutes weren't rebounding, and Trimble was one of them. Is that clear enough? Yeah.
Boom.
That's clear enough. So if you don't like to call people out publicly,
yeah,
why in God's name have you just called out your players publicly?
That's the
why
sure
have
sign
you
you're
that
about to call someone out publicly.
Yeah.
When you say, I don't like to do this, but here it comes.
What do you make of that?
Well, the criticism of that they weren't rebounding. I mean, Melo Trimble is like 5'11".
Yeah, 6'2".
I mean, like for some of the big guys, I mean, I do, you know, I think that's fair, but I don't. You're not going to beat – maybe you're not going to beat Wisconsin anyway, but you're definitely not going to beat them without Melo Trimble in the game. So the criticism of him rebounding
– You're also not going to beat them with unlimited second chances, which they had
true
in the second half and down the stretch of that game. I mean, they would basically just shoot until they make it, and the Terps were one and done. So, talk to me in a week and a half. I'll tell you what I make of it. Let's see how they respond.
Strange.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, we'll see how it plays
out. Very
strange.
Un-Turge-like.
Yeah.
But maybe he thought they're mature enough to handle it, and he's trying to get them tournament ready. We'll see.
What else you got?
I've got a bizarre story here involving the death of one Walter Mack Clark, who was last seen by his ex-wife on this past February 12th. And a couple of days later, there was a woman seen going into his apartment complex, his senior complex in Knox Hill. That was the last time they'd seen. This was on Valentine's Day. And
I've got a gift for you.
Yeah, possibly. And what they found was police later found Clark unconscious in this woman's home in Northeast Washington, naked and curled up in a closet barricaded shut with a wooden 2x4. And they said that the 76-year-old woman who lived there had beaten Clark with a baseball bat.
Happy Valentine's
over
Day.
The course of 2 days.
Chicago jeez style.
Yeah. She said that.
What did he do?
He's 76. How old is she?
He's 63. She's 76.
Oh, my
wow
God.
Yes. So
she's got a good swing.
Frontier Justice.
The woman's name.
She can still make contact.
The woman's name is Clark. I'm trying to find her first.
His
name is Clark.
It doesn't matter.
Gable
what
Bennett.
Is.
I'm sorry. Her name is Bennett.
It doesn't
and
matter.
She described to police that Clark was her boyfriend, and that he had forced her to smoke a drug with the street name Love Boat, as the two argued, and she accused him of seeing
it's
other.
It's the Love Boat.
Seeing other women. Police said that she told police, "I beat him with a baseball bat various times over the last day and a half." You did? Yes, I did.
That is awesome.
So own it, baby.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
That's some drug.
Gary tried to get me to smoke Love Boat.
Apparently there was somebody who cleaned this woman Bennett's house who saw the beatings and tried to leave, and then Bennett like beat her, and
you
then
want
they drank
some?
They drank vodka, and like
what?
It was all going on
it's
in
just
the back
so
room.
Bizarre.
76.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, rough end for Walter Mack.
Never date older women.
What do you got? Is that it? Are we good?
did you want to hear about Jose Canseco's warning
sure.
to us all?
Yeah.
Now he had this right about steroids. So maybe maybe we should give him the benefit of the doubt of this.
Maybe.
He said the robot threat is being taken too lightly. Robots will not attack and kill us physically like in the movies. For 60 years, robots have been systematically destroying us in a clandestine economy-based war. And he says that this is the beginning of the end for us.
Well, maybe he's right.
AI does.
But do you want to go to the barricades for Jose Canseco?
Well,
do you want to say?
He's got some good company in this. Bill Gates and Elon Musk have also been out there saying, oh, yeah, this is happening, and it's not going to be good for mankind.
I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords.
Okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Old Guy Radio, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day. This is the great Jackson Brown, California's own. This is Doctor My Eyes. The first album that he ever released, probably about 1970 or 71, something like that. And he asked, why are we playing this? Well, it actually has nothing to do with Jackson Brown. It has to do with the fact that Julius Erving, the great Dr. Julius Erving, is 67 years old today. So I'm not even going to have critical commentary about Jackson Brown because you know that I love Jackson Brown.
But 72, Tone, just to confirm that.
1972.
Recorded in 71, released March of 72.
So I will talk a little bit about Julius Erving because Julius Erving went to a high school near my high school. He went to Roosevelt High School, and I went to Hewlett High School. And Julius Erving was a pretty good basketball player as a sophomore and junior in high school, and then quite a good basketball player as a senior in high school. He's about 6'2" or 6'3" as a senior in high school. And he may have even been all Long Island, but he wasn't recruited very highly. And he ended up at the University of Massachusetts, which is in western Massachusetts, and not particularly thought of as a basketball hotbed or anything like that. Julius grew to be about 6'7" by the time he was a freshman at UMass. And he was great. And he was great right away. And in those days, you could jump to the ABA. The NBA wasn't taking anybody who wasn't at least finished with his junior year, maybe even his senior year in college. And Julius Erving applied to the ABA at that point, the American Basketball Association, and he was drafted by the Virginia Squires, who had suffered a loss a couple of years before by Rick Barry saying, I'm not playing there. I don't want to be there. And Rick Barry jumped back to the NBA, back with the Golden State Warriors. Maybe they were the San Francisco Warriors at the time, but they were the Warriors, and won a championship within an hour and a half. Rick Barry's one of the greatest players of all time. So Julius Erving starts playing with the Virginia Squires, and then he ends up on the New York Nets. And the reason there was a merger in 1976 was because of one person, Julius Erving. Julius Erving was that good. The commissioner of the ABA at that time was the great ex-Knick player Dave DeBuscher. And Dave DeBuscher petitioned the NBA to merge, and his asset was Julius Erving. Julius Erving was a ghost. Everybody'd heard of him. We said, who's this guy, Julius Erving? But he wasn't being seen in any of the real major
markets.
Did
they play in Richmond, Tone? Is that where the Virginia
They played
Squires
some of their
played?
Games. They played in a variety of arenas. They played
oh,
at
so
the
so they didn't
Scope.
Have a home arena,
They played in Newport News. They played in
Hampton,
Norfolk.
Richmond,
they played,
yeah,
they
played,
Interesting.
They went all around the state. They went all around the state.
Huh.
And Julius Erving ends up on the Nets, and he personally forced the merger because he was the greatest player in the world. Everybody wanted to see him, and the only way to do it was to have this merger, and he ended up with the New York Nets, who then became – well, he left to go to the Philadelphia 76ers. They couldn't afford him, so he went to the Philadelphia 76ers. One of the greatest players of all time, and used to live – as I know this because it actually happened – Julius lived in a condominium on – on right next to Meadowbrook Parkway in Lido Beach. And when I would sometimes, when they played in the Island Garden or when they played in the Nassau Coliseum, you would go south on the Meadowbrook Parkway to the Long Beach and Lido Beach exits. And I would be coming out of Newsday at that period of time, and I would be driving a Ford Pinto, and Julius was driving an Avante. And
well, that sounds fancy.
We used to race a little while until Julius put his foot on the accelerator, and that was that. I've known him a long time, always really
liked
Julius
Irving. That was the first team that I ever grew up rooting for, the Sixers team. Julius Irving, Andrew Toney, Mo Cheeks, Billy Cunningham. They were great in the when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old.
They got Moses Malone, who was Moses a Malone. Difference maker yep. of all sorts.
So the ABA, so I'm a little older than Chris, but born 1970. Like I don't really remember that. Did they draw equally?
No.
So the NBA was king.
Oh, absolutely. But the ABA did some innovative things. They had the 3-color basketball and they had the 3-point line. And 3-point line was a really good innovation. You may not like it now because everybody shoots from out there, but that was a real innovation there. And they had their games, you know, would be 130 to 121 and stuff like that. And they drew some crowds locally. I mean, they had
same
good franchises.
Season, same time of year?
Exactly the same. They had a franchise in New York on Long Island, which mattered to me because I was from Long Island. They had a franchise in Louisville, Kentucky, the Kentucky Colonels. They had the Floridians who played in and around.
Was Darryl Dawkins the New York originally Nets? In the ABA?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Who were the other big? Julius Irving, obviously.
Julius Irving was Rick Barry. Barry was number one and helped found the league. Julius Irving was the next great superstar in the league. There were players who were good players.
Artis Gilmore and Dan Issel. That's who I'm thinking of.
Artis Gilmore and Dan Issel played for Kentucky. And, you know, and Kentucky was the number one franchise.
So Indiana
had Roger Brown and Bob Nedelicki. Indiana had a very good franchise. That's why the Indiana Pacers exist.
Huh.
You know.
Someone's probably written a book on this.
Terry Pluto's written a bunch of books
on this. Okay. Why then would the NBA, if they're dominant, go to the ABA? Just because they were losing enough market share?
They accepted 4 teams in. The ABA had a maximum of 8 or 9 or even 10 teams at one point. They took 4 teams in ultimately, and they were the markets of San Antonio, Indiana, Denver. They weren't in Denver. They weren't in Indiana. And what was the 4th one? New York.
And then they had an expansion draft or something with the players?
They just took the players.
No, they just took the teams.
They came in as fully formed teams. And then there was a dispersal draft of the other players.
You know, they're talking about – I know Vegas gets a lot of – chatter about NBA expansion, but they also have talked about, because of the basketball tradition in the state, putting a team in Louisville, which would be really interesting.
They should. They were a very big draw.
Always,
the Kentucky Colonels were the best team in the ABA.
Yeah.
So last night, I met Bill Isaacson at Chad's. Bill has some Gary Shandling memorabilia that we're going to put up, you know, a couple of posters and pictures and things like that. I'm not soliciting this from anyone in terms of memorabilia, but I have this dopey jersey that they gave me on the way out the door of the radio station.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and I've never unpacked it. So we'll stick that on a wall. Has my
Big
name
tone,
on it. Big
Tone, 99.
Kornheiser, 1.
1, just, you know.
Oh, I see.
Remember that day? That was a bad day.
I thought that was a great day.
No, because
I
wanted,
on perspective.
Just wanted to get out.
I know.
Why are you people standing here? Why are you giving me
a speech? Did you give a speech?
I'm out. No.
It was short.
Yeah,
it was not memorable.
I don't like
funny.
Most of you.
No. I went up in the attic today and I found a picture that my daughter had done, you know, in 4th grade or 5th grade, and I like it. I'll put that up on the wall. So last night.
Do you want some posters of Guinness? I think I have some. Of those.
Yeah, we have to get rid of those.
I have an old Farrah Fawcett poster.
No, we're not having that. So when Wendy Rieger said that she would happily be a celebrity bartender.
Yes.
So I got my friend David Israel last night to email Maureen Dowd, the great Maureen Dowd, the Pulitzer Prize winning columnist Maureen Dowd. And said, well, Tony wants you to be a celebrity bartender, but he doesn't want to ask you himself. And she said, well, I'll be happy to do it, but I don't know how to mix any drinks. No, that's not the problem.
She's Modo.
This is what I want to be able to do is like come in here one day and say, tonight, Maureen Dowd's work in the bar.
Right.
All right? Tonight, Wendy Rieger's work in the bar. Tonight, Connie Chung's going to be a waitress. I mean, that's what other reason would there be to own a restaurant, except to have people you know and you like, just as a sort of goof, come in and do right.
Right.
Am I right
and
on
you,
this?
And so you need to wear white tux and tails at all times with the bow tie undone. White tie undone. And
tails.
A lot of banquettes.
Yeah. So I was in there last night. It was
tones.
It was okay. Here's what I wanted. My gas bill, I got the final. Ruben Rodriguez, God bless Ruben Rodriguez. He said they overcharged me by $1.83.
Oh.
And so he will make that up to me, the $1.83. And let me.
Well worth it.
Let me do the sort of the important work here. This is the important work. Because you're going to say, well, you know, you're getting a $1.83 back on your next bill. And I understand it's a very small amount. I appreciate it's a very small amount. But I was overcharged. I'm not the only one who was overcharged. I am the only one with a public forum, with access to airwaves, with a certain amount of fame, so that if I start going crazy, I am going to get an audience. Someone is going to call me. Some president of some company is going to say, I don't want to hear this anymore from this guy. Just give him a call. That's very good for me. But what I'm trying to do, if I talk to Ruben, which I did, about customer service is, there are disenfranchised people that not everybody has this access that I have.
What about the hundreds of thousands of other people who were overcharged?
Will you at least listen to them?
Sure.
Will they get the time to air their grievances in front of a reasonably sympathetic person so that if you have made a mistake, you can make that right?
And if I say
I'm not
yes,
Thomas Jefferson, but this is what
you're a voice respond? For the voiceless.
Well,
did he respond by saying, and if I say yes, will you stop calling and writing?
Please leave me alone.
So anyway.
Will you review my cable bill? It's getting a little high.
You know, the problem with people like Michael and the problem with many of you people out there.
Here we go, the youngs.
Is that what you do is you sign up for the automatic deduction. And they just take.
I don't have an automatic deduction, but I do sometimes incur late fees.
Oh,
you
God.
You should never incur late fees.
Well, I mean, that's
ever.
On you.
You should get the bill and you should pay I pay the bills within
the day
five
it comes,
days.
Turn it around.
That's what I do.
But
you should. But if you have the automatic deduction, you don't know when you've been overcharged.
Right. And they take your money.
I go through
it.
My bills.
Yes, you do.
I look at my bills. I'm the last of the Mohicans on this.
You're not. I am also like that. I look at every charge on every credit card.
I just want
to
make sure it's right.
Every month.
Why do I believe you?
Because the whole game is, they're like, well, let's just slide this in.
I'll tell you, worst offenders.
It's a dollar.
If they make a dollar from everybody, they've made $4 million.
That's their plan.
Worst offenders, in my limited experience.
Well, Ruben Rodriguez was good to mom, to be fair.
Well, I mean, corporations in general.
He did right by you.
Specifically.
But yes. But among the worst offenders is, and I won't name names, but
Mello
my
Trimble?
Cell phone.
I don't do this publicly.
My cell phone company. So for the business, we have 9 lines. It's not a huge account, but it's, you know, there's 9 lines on a thing. And I look at it very carefully every month. And I'm not exaggerating when I tell you 3 to 4, maybe 3.5 times a year on average, there is an error in the phone bill. You want to guess how many of the 3.5 it's in my favor?
Zero.
Exactly.
Zero in your favor.
And they will always correct it.
But you got to get them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to be vigilant, ever vigilant against these companies.
You got to invest the time, which like your dollar 83, the half hour it takes me to get them to correct the $35 thing is like it's not even worth it. But just like
I haven't looked at a bill
it.
In 5 years.
Yeah, that's a bad
that's
formula,
That's a bad
dude.
Thing. That's not a good
I
idea.
I take my $10,000 bill from the stack, and I just put it in an envelope.
It says, just cover me?
I don't want it to be in front of me anymore.
Peter Jennings, who is our friend, not that Peter Jennings, the other Peter Jennings, from Dow, Japan, and Dow
Japan.
Korea.
Right.
Lives in Tokyo. He writes, happy belated Thanksgiving. All good in Tokyo in spite of the recent earthquake and first snowstorm here in November since 1962. Heard about your shopping trip and wanted to supplement your tie collection. Junko-san is shipping you a care package. There's essentially one decent one in the bunch with the Tokyo American Club logo. By the way, I was in D.C. with the American Chamber of Commerce Japan the week of November 14th. It was inspiring to be able to witness the traffic, weather, and landmarks I've heard about almost live for many years as a lawyer. Little a dream come true for me. We met with over 30 members of Congress. I started each meeting with a TK salute and indicated that my career highlight was getting a letter read on your show. So I have a lot of ties here. Some of them are nice. I probably have 50 to 60 ties here. And they're
That's
nice.
This is not the first
time. We can give some ties away.
We'll give them away.
This is not the first time Peter sent his ties.
No.
Can I see a few of them?
Yeah, sure. Look
he
at
also
them.
Sent some great winter hats a couple years ago. Yeah. Remember that?
Fabulous. I've used them.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
So what I was going to do today, and now we're sort of out of time. I mean, I'm not going to do it today.
Nice.
But what I was, they're all pretty nice.
Nice purple.
Yeah, you can have that. So
put it in my pocket.
I've talked about, you can have it. You don't have sneak out with it. Yeah. Yes,
well, I don't
there's 100
you
ties
because we're on radio.
There's 100 ties in there. Take the tie.
Can't believe he's taking the tie.
I wish he hadn't taken that.
I wanted to get everybody's opinion on. It's too late on the doctorate. Look, let me explain this. I'm getting this honorary doctorate from Binghamton, and it's very important to me, and I'm thrilled by it. But there are two things I have to do. One is I have to send them my hat size because I have to wear the graduation hat.
9 1/4.
I don't think it's that much. And I don't know how to measure it or anything like that. So how did you measure yourself for the Indochino?
He's a rope.
Yeah, he's a rope. And a ruler.
Rope and a yardstick.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
I have a number of craniology measurement tools. Yeah.
And the other thing is, and more importantly to me, they want to know what name I want on the doctorate. I've got about 2 or 3 minutes to explain why this is important.
Shinebox.
But I'm not going to do it today. No, it's not going to be Dr. Shinebox.
Mr. Dr. Tony Kornheiser.
So
done.
Business class. Yeah.
So we're gonna. We'll reconvene.
What are the options? Only Anthony Irwin Kornheiser or Tony Kornheiser?
Yeah,
Dr. Mr. Okay. Tony.
Yeah,
Dr. Yeah. Mr. Tony is the best choice.
Dr. Mr. Tony.
My confirmation name is Christopher. So my name is Christopher Michael Christopher Slizzard because I'm an idiot. And I didn't pay any attention. So I just chose my same name.
That's so funny. That makes me happy. So at some point, we will reconvene and this will be the lesson of the day, but not now. Let's get out of here and we'll come back with emails and jingles. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
When it was 2016, the monkey had a bad year. He had a very bad year, prognosticating in games of chance. It disappointed Bud Grant. And even Jaws had him beat. Now it's on to 2017.
Brad Weiss sent that in from Williamsburg, Virginia, and he wrote, Robert came up with the idea in the lyric. Robert would be the incomparable Robert Berg, I assume. And he says, then I futzed around with it, and we agreed on this. And he writes, just call me Old Blue Eyes. No, I mean, damn it, call me Old Blue Eyes. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Barry's Verluga for coming on with us today. I'd also like to thank today's sponsor, MeUndies. Please support MeUndies the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. As a sad note, Shad writes this in. Dave Mays, a little from Colorado, passed away recently, and he was described as funny and angry, and little things made him nuts, which is the perfect match for this show. Dave Kincannon of Denver, John Farris of Aurora, Nebraska, Kitty Betham of Philly, and myself were all friends with Dave, and he will be missed, and that is from Shad. Thank you very much. From Russell Cruz in Shreveport, Louisiana. After the third Hallmark movie in a row one Sunday this holiday season, I developed a foolproof way to make them palatable. Pick out a character and decide they are a ghost. Sometimes it's the dishwater dull male lead. Sometimes it's the wise grizzled old man who teaches the male lead life lessons. But honestly, the most fun is when it's a dog. Making a character a ghost turns all interactions between the non-ghost female lead and the other characters into psychological minefields. This is so smart. I also recommend talking through your ideas on this new ghost-filled genre with your significant other. As in my case, it ruins the viewing experience. And eventually she'll turn the dial back to HGTV. Not the best, but better than Hallmark. From Albert Chan in Aurora, Ontario. Will Bao Bao have to learn Mandarin when she arrives in China? She has arrived.
Yeah,
she's in. She's down.
Yeah, she's there.
Own plane.
Yeah, her own plane. From Dan Wurzel in Baltimore, Maryland, Bao Bao is being transported, or was being transported, in a custom plexiglass enclosure, which the zoo spent months preparing her for. Her in-flight menu is 55 pounds of bamboo, 2 pounds of apples, 2 bags of biscuits, 2 pounds of sweet potatoes. I think this tactic might work well for Mr. Tony. We just have to make the enclosure look like his kitchen, complete with a sink to hover over and a fake phone to call and complain about his gas bill. His menu would be 55 handfuls of Triscuits, 2 pints of ice cream, 2 feathers, and 2 strong sedatives.
The thing needs 60 pounds of food for a 12-hour flight? Or
once again, in the paper are pictures of people weeping.
Weeping.
Yes.
They're weeping.
Jesus wept.
Are you kidding me? It's a fur ball that will claw your eyes out if it gets right.
It would murder you if it had the chance.
It's a bear.
Yes.
It's a wild animal.
Crying over Harambe, far more acceptable.
This is absurd.
Nothing happened to this
Harambe.
Thing.
This is absurd. What are you crying?
Right.
No crying in baseball.
Michael in Scottsdale. I think you meant to say the Panda University. What did I say? Panda?
The.
We said UP, University of Panda.
The University of Panda.
PUS, Panda University State.
All right, listen to this. This is from Patrick Miner in Live Oak, California. 10 days ago, my family and I received a call saying, turn on the news and then run. It began what was undoubtedly one of the scarier periods of time in my life. My wife, myself, our 3 children aged 16, 14, and 12, joined my 63-year-old mother and 60-year-old stepfather at their home, and we attempted to flee our little town of Live Oak, California. We were told that the emergency spillway on the Oroville Dam, you remember this from last week, was facing imminent failure. We were told that our home would be gone if that happened. Our neighbors were loading up in a panic. Lines at the gas pumps were 2 hours long in a town with a population of 5,000. I'm writing to thank you for doing your show. During this stressful time, as we failed to evacuate and then sat in our home, hoping we didn't have to use the ladders against the side of the house to climb to the roof to avoid drowning, I was listening to a backlog of TK podcasts. Thanks for being a distraction in a time of great fear and stress. We are home now and going back to school and work. Things are momentarily safe at our little town, while much of the valley around us is soaked and evacuated. In the event that our family has to run to the hills again, I will be grateful to your show for the calming normalcy you provide and have provided me since I started listening to you on radio in 1994 or so. How great
is
that?
That's awesome. Very nice. That's also, calming normalcy could be a good restaurant.
Yes. William Rutsch, you can talk about Sheena Parveen's revolution all you want, kids, but Wendy Rieger is still getting it done. From Mark Schwab in Nashville, Tennessee, a few Thanksgivings ago, my in-laws had one working cable box and therefore only one working TV in their house. The father, as I'm related to now by marriage, was in control of the remote. His house, his TV, no problem. I thought we'd watch football and get drunk as rats all day. No problem. In what I can only describe as the greatest troll move of all time, he kept the TV on the Hallmark Channel the entire day. When we would complain, he wouldn't even acknowledge the sound of our voices. Ever seen Will You Marry Me, a Christmas love story in its entirety? I have. I didn't sing a single down of football that Thanksgiving. He sewed a clown suit on us that day. Dreadful. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I have a piano. Ba-dee-dee-da. There was a longing welled up inside a chest. Couldn't stand the settle for less than the best. She didn't know what that meant, but she knew that she needed to trust that it was there. She didn't know what it meant, but she was definitely going there. Didn't know what vehicle to use. Didn't know whether to cry out or be amused. Cry out or be amused. Just be amused. was a battle, kept her up in the night, a constant battle between the dark and the light, a familiar place that she'd frequently visit, that was darker than the night, filled with critical voices that obscured a clear sight. No one left her so confused, didn't know whether to cry out or be amused. Cry out. You are all that there is.
So I